When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast, a proud affiliate of the Hockey News. I'm your host, Nick Belsky, joined as always by Nick Horwat. And there's some interesting news happening surrounding the Penguins, specifically their front office in Kyle Dubas and head coach Mike Sullivan. We'll talk about the quote-unquote rift that is growing between the two and what is driving a sand wedge between the new president of hockey operations. I don't know if we can even say new at this point. It's been a year. But the newest president of hockey operations slash general manager and the obvious veteran head coach who potentially could be going into his 10th season as head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins. And after that, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the UFAs and RFAs coming up for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Some defensive depth is lacking, and we'll talk about that. And then also, there's some veterans that are in need of a new contract. Should the Penguins bring them back? We'll discuss all of that here in the next 30 to 35 minutes. But Horwat, before we get into that, are you surprised at all of this news coming out this week about Mike Sullivan, Kyle Dubas, and the potential of Sullivan being on his way out?
The potential of, you know, yeah, it's all surprising to me. Because of the way, we've had discussions about this already a couple times before, because of the way Dubas spoke so highly of Mike Sullivan and the way Fenway Sports Group appears to love Sullivan so much, the fact that these rumors, whether they be pure rumors or there's something there, it is a little surprising, I think. And normally, when there's smoke, there is fire. You have to figure that. So maybe there is something stewing around. And I think this little quote-unquote rift or power struggle that might be taking place within the organization is something to behold, something to surely keep an eye on. I mean, you do have to figure that it kind of makes sense. I think Sullivan has been known to kind of be stubborn at times with certain things. And Dubas is coming in and wanting to build the team in his image. If that includes swapping out assistant coaches, which is what it most likely seems, Sullivan just has to be okay with that. And we'll discuss more in a few minutes here, but I think overall this is a little surprising, but also not if you look at the details. And if you look at the grand scheme of things, it's also not. But now, at the end of the day, I'm a little shocked by it.
Yeah, and I think it still follows, and that's why it makes a little bit more sense, because we've been steadfast on, listen, Mike Sullivan is going to be the head coach next season unless he wants to leave, and he hasn't shown any real, you know, signs of wanting to leave. Well, here's the first sign of him wanting to leave, and it follows along the lines of that. The Penguins aren't going to fire Mike Sullivan. That's just not going to happen. But the fact that there's a power struggle now, the fact that there's another team that has been, as Elliot Friedman put it, really interested in a big swing at head coach, whether that's John Cooper of the Tampa Bay Lightning or he named Mike Sullivan of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Like you mentioned, when there's smoke, there's fire. And now not only is it Nick Kiprios, who we always take with a grain of salt, but now you throw in Frank Saravalli of the Daily Faceoff. We'll get to what he said. And Elliot Friedman of 32 Thoughts and Sportsnet, we'll get to what he said as well. But once you start to get it around and everybody's not saying it flat out, this doesn't seem real. I mean, Elliot Friedman was the closest to that, saying it's surprising to him, and it would still be a surprise if Mike Sullivan is not the head coach of the Penguins, but there's something there. And when you say that there's something there, that tells you that some of this other reporting is also probably going down the right road. And the reporting that we're referencing, obviously the big one, is from Frank Saravalli. He said on Daily Faceoff Live this past Tuesday that there's a bit of a power struggle between Kyle Dubas and Mike Sullivan. Dubas wants to make changes to the coaching staff, i.e. Todd Reirden and Mike Vellucci potentially, but Sullivan has been resistant. I'm sorry, what's the hierarchy here? I thought the president of hockey operations and general manager both sat above the head coach, but apparently there's room for discussion here, and I think this is one of very few, probably could count on one hand, organizations where that could even be possible.
Yeah, and what's weird is that it absolutely could be possible here because of the way, like, you're right, president and general manager usually have final say in certain things over the head coach. You gotta remember, in Pittsburgh though, the head coach and the ownership group, which is probably the one or two heads above Kyle Dubas in this situation, those two see eye to eye, the ownership and the head coach. So if the head coach is going to pull some strings here, if he feels like he has that power and has that ability, then why wouldn't he do it? Why wouldn't he try and build the team in his image? For what it's worth, it seems like Mike Sullivan could make a great front office face one day if he ever wants to leave the bench side. But I can see how a power struggle would form with that sort of, whenever Fenway cemented Mike Sullivan's contract in 2 years ahead of time for three more seasons. Yeah, if you're Mike Sullivan, you're going to feel like you're pretty solid, that your job security is pretty well locked up. I mean, you have to figure Fenway decided to change the management group over the head coaching group whenever. Mm-hmm. That was the right move and the right idea to swap Ron Hextall for Kyle Dubas. But in the same vein, whenever an ownership group comes in, you don't think they also want to put in their people? They kept Mike Sullivan around for a reason. And for what it's worth, they probably brought in Kyle because they thought he would do the same thing. And now after a season, maybe Kyle still wants to keep Mike Sullivan, but it's those other names. It's those Todd Reirdens, it's the Mike Vellucci's. I don't know about the rest of the assistant coaches. I don't know what their status really is. They're not as front-facing as, you know, these two specifically, because they run the power play, the defense, and the penalty kill and the offense respectively. Those are the two big names. And I think Andy Kyoto's done a good job as the goaltending coach, so I really don't know if he's going anywhere. But it's going to be those two. It's going to be those two that are the front lines of who these assistant coach changes might be centered around, and who knows what happens. And it's not good that Mike Sullivan looks at Todd Reirden and goes, I could keep him around.
Yeah, it's obviously, that's never a good sign whenever everybody and their mother knows that at the very least that should be a move that's made. Maybe not because the blame all falls on Todd Reirden, because it doesn't, and a lot of people say that it does. I mean, part of that blame needs to go on Mike Sullivan, too, because if Reirden was failing in that position, then one of two things happened. Either Sullivan took over and didn't tell anybody, in which case Sullivan was the one that continued to run that power play into the ground, or he didn't take over, he let Reirden continue with what he was doing, in which case that's also bad management of saying, hey, keep doing what you're doing, even though you're not succeeding. It's not putting your employee in a position to succeed, but with the Sullivan instance here, there is a feeling of immunity simply because the Penguins organization has gone through two different ownership groups and three different front offices, and the one constant has been Mike Sullivan. But the other point of that is they've gone through two ownership groups and three front offices, and you still haven't won. You're the thoroughbred, right? Or that's not a word. But you're the one constant there. Maybe you're the problem. And that's like when, you know, everybody says, oh, I've had this many girlfriends and they all don't work. Well, maybe you're the problem, Mike. Maybe you're the problem. And it's just, to me, it's a weird hill to die on. We've talked extensively since the season ended 3 weeks ago. We've talked extensively about the numbers surrounding Todd Reirden's performance, surrounding Mike Vellucci's performance. But forget those numbers. 4 years with these assistants, two first round losses, two missed postseasons. That's all you have to say. These are assistant coaches in the National Hockey League. They don't have a long shelf life. Neither do head coaches, but Mike Sullivan has kind of subverted that expectation. Now with the assistants, it's, listen, if you want your assistants to stay, if you're going to die on that hill, then you're going to die on that hill, because the Penguins need some change behind the bench. And if Sullivan's dying on the hill of protecting Todd Reirden, I'm just not sure that that shows that I should have a lot of faith in his evaluation skills as far as his assistants.
It's like you said, you got to look for the most common denominator. That's the, that's where it's all leading to. And man, yeah, Reirden's numbers just this year alone are enough to, I mean, if he wasn't at the end of his contract, like we're all assuming here, he would have been fired midway through the season, right? Those numbers were porous from the start, from the get-go. Whenever you're given 4 to 5 future Hall of Famers on one power play unit, and it's 30th in the league, and worse from what it was last year. Mike Sullivan, during last year's locker cleanout, Mike Sullivan went to bat for just a complete mid power play. He got angry whenever someone asked about it. This time around, it got worse. And to still, he didn't go to bat for it this year, but to still have faith in the one most likely running it and setting it up and putting the certain lines together and the system and whatever, that's not good anymore. That's not how it should be. You're going to need it. Unless Todd Reirden told you, Mike Sullivan, unless Todd Reirden came to Mike Sullivan and the ownership group and the management group and said, I'm going to do these changes. Here's my plan for next season, and outlines a completely different look, there's no reason why he should stick around. And if that is what he did, then whenever he's extended or whenever he comes back, whenever that announcement comes through, that needs to be part of the announcement. That needs to be a big part of he plans on changing. Boom. There you go. And also, as when it comes to the most common denominator, sometimes they'll tell you, I plan on changing, and they don't. So, best of luck.
Yeah, when it comes to Mike Sullivan, it's also a weird situation because he had somewhat of a hand in the hiring of Kyle Dubas, but here's the thing. It was rumored and discussed about the rift between Sullivan and Ron Hextall. Now there's rumors of a rift between Sullivan and Dubas. Dubas and Hextall are two very different human beings.
Oh, yeah.
Just in every sense of the word. If Mike Sullivan continues to have these problems, he just has a power problem. Right? He just has a power problem, and eventually every head coach runs out of leeway. How many times has Peter Laviolette been fired? He's considered one of the better coaches of the modern era. How many times did Mike Babcock get fired? Not for being weirdly Mike Bab, like other stuff, but how many times did good coaches get fired in this league? Gerard Gallant is considered a pretty good coach in this league. He's been fired seemingly 30 times from every team. Like that's what it seems like. Every coach has a shelf life. And if you're going to continue to be an issue, and if you're going to continue to try to make it your way or the highway, at some point somebody has to put their foot down. And this could get worse before it gets better. But at the end of the day, you know, if he's dying on the hill of Todd Reirden, it is just, I keep going back to that. That is a weird hill to die on after a historic run that has turned very sour for Mike Sullivan as head coach of the Penguins. But, you know, this is only the beginning of this story. Mm-hmm. We might get a resolution at some point, but it's not going to be anytime soon. We'll have to wait and see what happens with that. And obviously, anytime there's assistant coach news from the Penguins, that would be a semi-resolution to see who won that power struggle. And if it's retaining Reirden, that sends a very bad message to the fan base that the president of hockey operations and general manager doesn't have as much power over the head coach as he should. But, you know, again, that remains to be seen. We'll keep an eye on that story as it develops. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about some of the players on the ice. The defensive depth, if you look at Cap Friendly, it is outside of the top six players. There's nobody signed. And we'll talk about that after the break.
Two guys drove to work. Neither guy wore a seatbelt. One guy got a ticket. One guy didn't. The same two guys drove home. One guy wore a seatbelt. One guy didn't. One guy made it home. The guy not wearing his seatbelt didn't. Don't risk it. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome back to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast. I talked yesterday on Iceberg to Go a little bit about how the Penguins might end up going through this offseason and not changing very much, if anything, about their defense core. I don't agree with it, but you can see the forest through the trees and how they could get there, and it's not that difficult. I mean, you look at Ryan Graves, Chris Letang, Erik Karlsson, Marcus Pettersson, all under contract. Three of them wouldn't be tradable. One of them is maybe an option to be traded, but also 5 years left on a contract coming off a really bad season. It's going to be impossible to trade them. And then you have, you know, a couple other players that are not under contract, but the Penguins are apparently high on them. And that's P.O. Joseph and Jack St. Ivany. But outside of that, Horwat, the depth defense here in the Penguins organization is fairly non-existent. You know, at the NHL level, with players that played at least 20 games this year, I mentioned Letang, Karlsson, Graves, Pettersson, and also add on John Ludvig is under contract. Joseph's the only defender that played more than 20 games and isn't under contract right now for the Pens. And then you look at the AHL level. There's three players, and they're all on their entry-level contracts, that are under contract. Owen Pickering, who is still at the moment a junior player that has spent a couple of games at the AHL level at the end of seasons. Isaac Béliveau, who played between the AHL and the ECHL this season, and Emil Pieniniemi, who was a draft pick recently, and again, similar to Owen Pickering, has been just coming over late in the season to play a couple games after his year has ended. That's it. Outside of that, the Penguins don't have anybody under contract to play in the AHL or to potentially be pushing any of these NHL guys. They have a couple of RFAs, Jack St. Ivany being the biggest one. We'll talk about him in a second. But then they have a host of unrestricted free agents in Jack Rathbone, Dmitry Samarukov, Ryan Shea, Taylor Fadun, who was the captain of the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins, and Xavier Ouellette. Let's start with Jack St. Ivany, because he made that jump late in the season, played, you know, a baker's dozen NHL games and really impressed a lot of people. Is he the most important remaining free agent for the Penguins to get signed before things heat up outside the organization around the end of June, beginning of July?
Yeah, I think so, actually. Now that you put it, and when you put it like that, yeah, absolutely, I would say so. Because he's going to be an easy one to sign to. It's going to be a no haggle, a no problem. Here's a couple of years at likely the same price. Maybe even it's still a two-way deal, too, like they just did with Sam Poulin. So you have that, you know, movability a little bit. Yeah, it's going to be an easy one to sign. You're going to knock it out right away. And like we've said before, he's likely going to be the starting, you know, home opener, the opener's sixth defenseman or third on the right side, just because of the lack of other options in that position. Unless they decide to bring people in, but at the moment, yeah, I would say he's going to fill in that role immediately and, you know, hopefully play the same way he did. So it's a good spot to be in for him, and that shouldn't be an issue to sign.
Yeah, and you look at what he was able to do. Now, again, it's only 13 games at the National Hockey League level, but he looked good with Ryan Graves in their one game together, and you would think on the outside looking in that him being a stay-at-home defenseman and Ryan Graves being primarily a puck-carrying defenseman, and he's better when he is the primary puck carrier, you would think that that could work. And if you're looking to make Ryan Graves any level of better than he was this year, which shouldn't be hard, putting him with Jack St. Ivany might be a really good way to do that. But you look at the other free agents that I would think are around that level of Altteri Pustinen, and Alex Nedeljkovic is probably right there as well. I still think it's St. Ivany, because Pustinen, yes, did he play over 40 games at the NHL level this year? Yeah. Did he look to be an NHL level talent? Yes. Does he have more that he could bring to the table as far as being a goal scorer? Yes. Do I think they're still going to sign him? Yeah. But when it comes to the importance of next year's team, I don't think there's anybody that matches up with Jack St. Ivany. Maybe an Alex Nedeljkovic, but we've talked about the goaltending situation, and it is not an easy science right now with Tristan Jarry's future uncertain. Obviously, 4 years remaining on that contract, but certainly not performing to that contract in year one. And then Joel Blomqvist being a guy that could potentially be looked at as the number two going into next season. I think that they're going to set their sights on Jack St. Ivany next. And I think that, yeah, while both St. Ivany and Pustinen could end up signing similar deals to what we saw, maybe a Sam Poulin signing earlier this week with a 2-year $775K, I do think that St. Ivany, as of right now, when you look at the current crop, and there's a long list here, he is the number one guy.
That's fair enough, too. You know, especially when it comes to the defenseman. Yeah, he's definitely the top dog in terms of who needs to be handed a deal to secure a spot and to come back for at least another season or two.
The last thing I'll ask here is, are you worried at all that outside of Pickering, Béliveau, Pieniniemi, nobody else is signed down there? And do you think the Penguins are going to replace these guys, or do you think they're just going to sign back guys like Fadoon and Ouellette, who've been here for a while? Ryan Shea, who played a large portion of the season at the NHL level. I believe he played over 30 games this year for the Pens at the National Hockey League level, and guys like Sam Marukov and Rathbone.
No, I'm not that worried, because they're easy deals to sign, A, and B, they're, for most of them at least, they're just, at this point, middling AHL guys. Taylor Fadoon probably doesn't have... I mean, he also might retire soon. I forget what his future kind of looks like. But, like, Xavier Ouellette isn't going to make a jump to the NHL again, I think. I think that trail has kind of ended. You know, last season may have been a chance, but an unfortunate timing of an injury. Sam Marukov was called up but never played. Jack Rathbone is also only 24 and might battle for a spot down the line. Things kind of have to open up for him on the left side, but I could see them re-signing him for a couple seasons or a season just to sort of gauge if he has that ability. Ryan Shea, they're going to nail down too, I think. I think that's going to be an easy contract to sign. Maybe it's an NHL deal again, much like what he just had. But I mean, they're going to be easy deals to sign, and if they don't return, you, as the fan, won't notice much. So I'd say it's not necessarily worrisome. It's not like these numbers are going to count against the cap too hard. And for what it's worth, maybe Jack Rathbone can make noise one day. For what it's worth, maybe Ryan Shea becomes a regular in the NHL. I mean, who knows what happens? And with them being UFAs, maybe Ryan Shea finds a new club somewhere and they just plug and play, because we're talking about depth guys here. It's not like we're discussing someone like P.O. Joseph, who might take over on that first line role because of some... because of his late season surge and some pretty good pushes from the coaching staff.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing here, too, is you look at those five names we mentioned, three of them were signed by Kyle Dubas. So it's not like he's getting out Ron Hextall guys or getting out, you know, Jim Rutherford guys. They're guys that he brought in. Mm-hmm. I mean, Rathbone was part of a trade, right? He was part of the Mark Friedman trade with the Vancouver Canucks. And I think next year is going to be, you know, if they choose to not bring back Ryan Shea, which... you know, you mentioned Shea late down in the season with St. Ivany. That's the pairing. And also that was a pairing that had a lot of success in Wilkes-Barre throughout the season. If they don't bring back Shea, if they don't bring back a guy like P.O. Joseph, that's when things could open up for Jack Rathbone on that left side. And he could become maybe the fourth or fifth option on the left side behind guys like, you know, Pettersson, Graves, and... really, I don't know who else would be up there above him at the moment. I mean, they might bring in an outside name, but, you know, it could be a big year for Jack Rathbone. So I'm not concerned because, like you said, these are mostly AHL guys, and there's a lot of talent around the National Hockey League to where you can bring that in and bring in a fresh, you know, perspective. But a lot of these guys are fresh, right? Rathbone just getting here. Ryan Shea just getting here this year. Sam Marukov, I'd have to look into it. He just signed his NHL-level deal. NHL AHL level deal with the Penguins to actually be in the organization and not just be signed to an AHL contract. So it is interesting to see that, you know, was there a plan here? That's what I want to know from Kyle Dubas, because a lot of these players, you know, if he wanted a clean slate, he has the clean slate, and a lot of that was his doing. So what does he replace that with, or does he continue to travel down the road that he started this year with the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins? But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some names that you might be a little bit more familiar with, still value in some of these veteran forwards, guys like Radim Zahorna, and oh yeah, we're going to talk some Jansen Harkins. We'll be right back after this break.
This episode is brought to you by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough reinvention. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you reinvent. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at pwc.com.
As a plant-based cheese company, Daiya has never talked about beef in an ad before, because someone somewhere once had a beef with saying beef and plant-based together. So putting a slice of Daiya cheese on a beef burger, not okay. Well, our delicious melty cheese has a beef with your beef about beef, because any step towards plant-forward eating is a step in the right direction. Daiya, 100% plant-based, even if you're not. Now made with Daiya Oat Cream Blend.
Welcome back to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast. I'm Nick Belsky. That's Nick Horwat. And the Penguins, they got a lot of business to attend to this summer, and they have a directive from their president of hockey operations to get younger. But they did have a heavy veteran presence at the AHL. For most of the season, they had to sit guys because they had reached the veteran maximum, according to the AHL, which is players that had played over, I believe it was 240-something professional games, whether that's AHL and NHL combined. But they had a lot of veterans at the American Hockey League level. A few were traded. Alex Nylander was traded to the Columbus Blue Jackets. Rem Pitlick was traded to the Chicago Blackhawks. But a few have contracts up, and we're talking about guys like Radim Zahorna, Vinny Hinostroza, Jansen Harkins, and a guy like Emil Bemström, whose contract is up, but he is a restricted free agent. Horwat, which of those four would you want to see the Penguins bring back next season?
Which ones were they again? I was like a little dozed and thinking of something.
You're good. Zahorna, Hinostroza, Harkins, and Bemström.
It helps that I really don't want any of them back.
That probably, yeah, that'll help.
If anything, I would say Hinostroza, just because I don't feel like he got... I don't want to say he didn't get a proper shake. There were definitely guys that deserved to be in the lineup ahead of him. But from what he showed in his short time, I can remember he came up in his first recall and looked decent enough to play. I mean, he was getting reps with Sidney Crosby in training camp. Mm-hmm. And seemed to be able to keep up pretty well. In his 14 games, at the NHL level, the Penguins this year, a goal and two assists. I think that one goal came in like the first two games or something like that.
He had a goal and an assist in his debut for the Pens against San Jose in that 10 whatever it was win. So,
okay, so who didn't score that game?
Yeah, exactly.
Still, I mean, and also, I forget how old he is now too. But there's different factors that could play into Vinny Hinostroza coming back or leaving. You know, like I said, when it comes to those four, I'm worried about any of them, really. Emil Bemstrom's an upcoming RFA, so maybe that kind of means you don't have much of a choice but to at least offer him something. But for what it's worth, I mean, if he was to come back, I'd say he's coming back as a 13th forward guy, and we already had the discussion of what Jesse Puljujärvi brings and that whole situation. So at the end of the day, I'm going to say Hinostroza is my answer, but maybe we just didn't see enough from Bemstrom, but also I was looking into it. He played 24 games. It sure didn't feel like it.
Yeah, it didn't. And that's the thing with Bemstrom. I mean, he's an RFA. He's only 24 years old. So that does fit along the lines of getting younger, if you're the Penguins, keeping younger legs around the organization. But he's not a guy that should stay at the NHL level all season long. Really, he's not a guy that should be in the lineup no matter what. He's not a guy that, in my opinion, over those 24 games, impressed me at all. I know he scored, I think it was 3 goals in total, which means, thankfully, that 6 doesn't turn into a third in the future. Ooh. But, you know, at the end of the day, he's not moving the needle. No. He didn't. At any moment of those, I mean, maybe he won on his breakaway goal against the New York Rangers. That's the one needle mover moment that he had. But outside of that, he was non-existent for 23 other games. So I'm not concerned about them bringing him back. Maybe they do bring him back as that AHL-NHL tweener, and that's what you end up doing with a guy like Emil Bemström. But, you know, he's a guy that you traded, what, a 6th-rounder and Alex Nylander for. I'm not incredibly worried about that. And yes, people will say, yeah, but Alex Nylander went on to have a really good end of the season with Columbus. Yet he was given power play one opportunities, and what did he show when he was with the Penguins? Nothing. And whether that's because it was Sullivan, whether that was because who he was playing with, it just wasn't working. So what does it matter that you give up a guy that had ran out of opportunities? It doesn't. So I'm not overly concerned about will they, won't they with Emil Bemström. I think that he's young enough and still has some growing to do that maybe you bring him back and you give him an opportunity to grow a little bit, perhaps at the AHL level if you can get him through waivers and let him start the season down there and try to build back up to where he can be. You know, he has a good shot where he can be a good fourth line, maybe at a best third line player. But again, there's other players in the organization, Ponomarev, Koivunen. We've said these names copious amounts of times that I'd rather see get an opportunity over Emil Bemström. The other name that you mentioned there is Hinostroza. That's the only other one I'd want back.
Yeah.
Zahorna, in every single stint that he's had, is just vastly unimpressive. He was fine for the first, 10 games that he played this season, and then after that, it was the same exact thing. He dropped off a cliff. They brought him back up because he was playing well at the Wilkes-Barre-Scranton level late in the season. He played 2 games, and guess what? He was worse than Bemström. Bemström was a non-factor. Zahorna was a factor, but in a negative way. Mm-hmm. So I would say they should be done with Zahorna. And Jansen Harkins, if you play that many games and you don't score a single goal, like his lone contribution was a shootout winner in Montreal. Great moment for him. But if your only contributions are that and a lot of social media pictures, then you probably shouldn't be brought back to the organization.
Yeah. Sure, offense isn't the name of his game. Okay, look at his AHL numbers, though. Those are nuts. His AHL numbers are ridiculous. So clearly he knows how to play the game of hockey. He knows how to score to some degree.
He just can't do it at the NHL level.
Yeah, and for whatever reason. Maybe, and don't get me wrong, there were times where absolutely he could have buried something or maybe just got a bad bounce or maybe just got a bad this, got a bad that. Like, he was also probably one of the unluckiest players on the roster on certain nights. But sometimes you just need that luck, too. And if you're not carrying that to the NHL level, then there's nothing we can do for you. I mean, no doubt. We can all agree he earned his spot out of camp and out of training camp after the Penguins picked him up on waivers. No doubt he earned his spot. He had speed. He looked good with whoever he was playing with. But the second the regular season started and he solidified his role, it was over. There was a good couple of games to start the year. I forget when he picked up those 4 assists, but that was it for him. That was it. And then when the Penguins did eventually send it back to the AHL, guess what he did? He found some scoring touch. He played like 14 games, scored 12 points. He knows how to do it. It just has never, ever translated to the NHL for some reason. Even with the Jets, only 13 goals in 199 games. That's career, by the way. So 13 goals in 199 minus 45.
Yeah. No, I mean, and the thing was, early in the season, it just seemed like Jansen Harkins wasn't up to NHL speed. Like, he seemed like he was a step behind everything, and he was playing on a line with Nola Chari and Jeff Carter. So it's not like he was playing. I mean, he started the year on the third line with Lars Eller, and I forget who, Drew O'Connor was on the left side at that point, and he didn't look up to speed with them. He came back, he was playing with Chari and Carter, he still didn't look up to speed, and eventually he started to look like, at the very least, he could play at that pace, but not well, right? And I don't know why he continued to get those opportunities. Yes, he did a lot of the intangible things. He was actually a little bit physical.
Yeah.
He was decent on the forecheck. Mike Sullivan seemed to very much like what he brought to the game, and that's fine. But when you don't score a singular goal in 43 games, it was 46 45. Games, 45 games, when you don't score a singular goal and you don't come close to scoring a singular goal, there's no reason to bring you back again when the Penguins have some young players that they want to give opportunities to. If that is a roadblock for a young player, that is a failure on Kyle Dubas's part, and that is a failure, if he's still here, on Mike Sullivan's part, and we expect him to be here. It's just, you know, going with the theme of the show. Mm-hmm. But I will agree with you, though. Hinostroza, there's nothing wrong with bringing him back as an AHL guy that, in, you know, break glass in case of emergency, he's perfectly fine as a spot starter in the NHL, and I think that he's perfectly fine on third, fourth line, definitely. Maybe on the first line, if it's Crosby playing at a high level, you could patch him over for a game or two. But majority-wise, he's going to be a fourth-line guy for you, that Jeff Carter role where he's going to kill penalties. He's going to, you know, potentially score a goal here or there, but you're really bringing him in for his forecheck. You're bringing him in just to bring a little bit of foot speed, and you're bringing him in to bring a little bit of antagonizing. Mm-hmm. And that's Hinostroza, and I have no issue bringing him back as one of the veterans that you want to bring back. So, you know, to me, it's maybe you bring back Bemstrom, maybe you bring back Hinostroza, but please, oh God almighty, I don't want to see Radim Zahorna or Jansen Harkins in this organization in 2024-25.
No, none of us do. If there's anything that's playing into Emil Bemstrom's side, it is that he's the youngest of those four that we just discussed.
And an RFA.
And if there's anything playing against Hinostroza out of these four that we just discussed, he's the oldest. And we do have to keep in mind all summer long Kyle Dubas' plan, which is to get younger. Mm-hmm. So re-signing a 24-year-old who may have potential to do something? I mean, Emil Bemstrom's numbers in the NHL aren't awful. You have to remember he played for a very bad Columbus Blue Jackets team.
Yeah, he has a couple 20-point seasons to his name. A
couple 20-point seasons isn't totally terrible, especially having, remember, like we just said, a couple 20-point seasons at 24. So he's been in the league for quite a while. 228 career games at the NHL level. That's nothing to scoff at. I get he was on a bad team, but still, you have to appreciate that he's been able to do that. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's got that rolling for him in the eyes of management, and that he's got the experience. He is still only 24 and can grow on that. Whereas Hinostroza, going to be 31 at some point. That doesn't help in the terms of getting younger. So we'll see where it goes. And I don't. Plus, that little bit of veteran presence in the AHL, because who knows what that team's going to look like. The AHL discussions are going to be quite interesting this year for those that really do care. Because who knows who they hire as coaching staff.
Yeah.
And Jason Spezza said in that release that they're trying to build a winner down there. They're trying to build a good team down there. So who knows if all those names we discussed previously even return, just because they're trying to build something. Mm-hmm. And maybe you build it around with Hinostroza in the lineup. Maybe you build it around with Emil Bemstrom in that lineup. That'll be interesting to see. It's a breath of fresh air to see a management group care about the minor league system a little bit.
Yeah.
And for what it's worth, that didn't even dig into some of the ECHL guys that, I'm not going to say fight for NHL roles, but could keep that team relevant, keep the Wheeling Nailers good, and find their way into the AHL squad, and then maybe make that leap.
Yeah. Guy like Lukas Svedkovsky that we always talk about in the summertime.
Yeah. Dylan Hamaliuk, who came back in the Erik Karlsson trade, too. I mean, he spent the whole season down there, but is still only 23?
Yeah,
something like that's kind of young, has a chance. So, man, the minor league system got interesting with Kyle here.
Mm-hmm. The last thing I'll mention about Bemstrom is, you know what his end of the year reminds me of? And again, it's not a one-for-one comparison, but the feeling that I get when thinking about Bemstrom's last 24 games is exactly the feeling I got when thinking about Mikael Granlund last season. The only difference is Bemstrom is much younger, and Bemstrom is on a much more manageable contract, i.e., when he signs as a restricted free agent, it's not going to be over $1 million. And if it's over $1 million, it's going to be by, you know, a chin hair over $1 million. Like, he's not going to be much money, whereas Granlund was over 30 years old, $5 million for two more years. And, you know, he might have had a good season in San Jose, but again, it's San Jose. Who else was going to score points for the San Jose Sharks this year? So, again, just a little in the back of my mind, a comparison that I thought of, maybe Bemstrom ends up doing that and shows out for the AHL Wilkes-Barre-Scranton Penguins, and maybe that sets him on the right course to being an effective bottom six player. So, you know what? I'm not going to even say maybe. Bring back Emil Bemstrom. I can't believe that I've gotten to this point, but bring him back, start him at the AHL, and see what he can develop into. That's where I'm at with it.
If it's worth anything else, Emil Bemstrom scored more than Mikael Granlund in this to end the season.
He did. Mikael Granlund had one garbage time goal, and I believe a loss or a very big win. It was a big win over the
Flyers.
So, to be fair, I believe one of Bemstrom's three goals were in a big win over the Flyers, too. But, hey, you know, either way. Trying to think. It was the game that Rust got injured. There were a lot of goal scorers in that game that were a little different. So, nonetheless, that's going to do it for this episode of the Tip of the Iceberg podcast. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Remember, you can find us on YouTube at Inside the Penguins or anywhere you get your podcast from. We'll see you guys next time.